Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 17th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a five-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 340. I have a super special return guest, comedian and podcaster, Jason Lawhead. We'll share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I'm just going to talk to you. I'm sitting here on my couch, recording this intro, ESPN on mute, Zion Williamson just dunking over everybody, being a monster. Why can't he get a white girl to hook up with him? Why is it so hard? Why does this kid have to go on Snapchat? Is he just too, does he just come across as too desperate? He's the number one basketball player in the country right now in college. None of these girls want to date him. All right. I don't know why I started off that way, but that's just what I was thinking about. This week was pretty cool. TPS reports all week. Busy. And I got to do a show at Gotham on Tuesday, which was a lot of fun. Shout out to Ken Krantz and Ritu Chandra, who host and produce the they produce the underground comedy show in the Vintage Lounge at Gotham. And I had a lot of fun. I had a new bit that I wanted to do, and I did it. I didn't back down from it. I stood in the pocket and stood in the pocket of silence at times. And I was working it out, and it felt so good because I was thinking about this bit all day, and I just had to do it. So that was cool. And before the show, I went to go see this movie called Gloria Bell, starring Julianne Moore. And I'll read you the blurb and give you a mini review. Here we go. A free-spirited divorcee spends her nights on the dance floor, joyfully letting loose at clubs around Los Angeles. She soon finds herself thrust into an unexpected new romance, filled with the joys of budding love and the complications of dating. This movie stars Julianne Moore and John Turturro, Holland Taylor, and Danielle Vega. I really like this movie. It was good. It was just like, it's not, I don't think it's something that you have to run to the theater to see, but it's one of the first movies of the year that has like a really good character study. It's just interesting. It's just really just like, I guess it's just about being like vignettes, kind of almost like these vignettes of being a woman, what it's like to be a woman in her 50s. And being a divorcee and dealing with whatever I just said in the little blurb about it. Julianne Moore is Julianne Moore. She's one of the best actors of her generation, and she takes her clothes off, and Julianne Moore has taken very good care of herself. That's not why you should go see the movie, but it was something that was presented in the movie. I'm not trying to be a creep, but she takes care of herself, and she's really good in this and very open and vulnerable. John Turturro is also good. I would say if you're looking for a grown up movie, you know, nothing like, I was excited to see Captain Marvel and I enjoyed it, but I also am just an even bigger fan of just seeing good acting on screen, you know? And, this was probably the first grown-up movie of the year, other than The Upside was good. I like The Upside. But that from January to March, it hasn't really been anything that I'd been excited to see. I still want to see Greta, but I'm feeling like that's kind of fading away from the theaters. And Us is obviously coming out this week, so I'm over the moon excited to see that. So I'm probably going to check that out twice this weekend, if possible. Yeah, but it is a good movie. I don't know that this is in wide release yet. I mean, here in New York, actually it's playing in Jersey now, so it's all over New York City, and it's in the suburbs of New York too. So I don't know how that plays in where you guys live, but in the tri-state area, it's not just playing in New York City and Brooklyn. So that's good news. I think it looks like it just expanded, and you can go to I'm looking at this, their Twitter, the Gloria Bell Twitter handle. If you get Showtimes, you can get Showtimes at tickets.GloriaBell.movie. So if you're looking for some grown-up fare, it's definitely worth seeing. Strike that initial thing. It's like, you don't have to go to theater, but if you want to see something, you want to get out, go see this one. I do like it. I get frustrated at one of the characters a lot. And towards the end, it's really like, what the fuck is this person doing? Jesus Christ. So I did get emotionally invested in this film. And I think it's directed by Sebastian Lelio, who directed Call Me By Your Name. He did not. He directed A Fantastic Woman that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film in 2017. He directed Disobedience. Why did I think he did? And then there's another version of Gloria that he did. Well, who did Call Me By Your Name? Disobedience was really good last year. I know that's on Autumn. That is on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can see that. Oh, Luca Guadagnino. He did Call Me By Your Name. Okay. Glad I didn't tank that, because I was like, oh, no, he didn't. But there is a 2013 version of Gloria. So it's a Chilean. And I think this one's a little darker. This is a little darker, I believe. That's what I heard. So that was cool. And then Friday, I took the day off and I drove down to Easton, Maryland, on the eastern shore of Maryland. And I went to go see Van Hunt, one of my favorite artists, Van Hunt, at the Avalon Theater in the Stoltz listening room, which is a 60 seater room. And, with a bar in the back, and he did an hour-long set, and it was fucking amazing. It was just like it's just a solo set, just him up there with the guitar. I had to nerd out and take a clip of him doing, I guess Dust is the lead single that from his first album. That was the first song that I heard of his anyway, Dust. And man, it was so amazing. I didn't know, and I got my ticket. This is when I told you a couple months ago that I said, you know what, I'm just going to get this ticket, and if nothing comes up for me, if I don't have any gigs, I'm just going to go to the show and get a hotel room, and after the next day, just go see my parents for a bit. But it was incredible. And this is probably the second time that I've ever done something like this, as far as just like taking a vacation day type thing and just going on an excursion like that. You know, I blabbed about going to the Williamstown Theater Festival last year, just seeing a show. But this is like the same thing. I mean, I think everybody needs to do at least one of these a year if you can, but it was so worth it. Like I guess it's like I've been following this guy for almost, what is that? If he came out in so 04 and not like 15 years. So to see like an artist like that just get better and evolve, and just to see him up close. When I got these tickets, I didn't know that I was going to be sitting in the front row like this. And shout out to Joe, who listens to this podcast, and he was there with his lady, and we actually were sitting together and watching the show, and it was incredible, man. It was so good, so worth it. Just the pure, like, his singing voice is incredible. His guitar playing is incredible. The lyrics, the writing of his music. And he had, like, a lot of the, like, obviously, you know, chicks dig the soul singer. But it was a lot of dudes that were, like, just super excited to hear him. Like, there was this one middle-aged white woman that's like, oh my God. Like, she loved everything he was doing. But when he would hit a chord or a certain chord that you would know that would be a certain a song, like, there were a lot of dudes in there like, yes, yeah. It was like, because I was sitting up there with, like, it was Joe and I, and then another young kid, college-age kid, that were just like, yeah, we're the nerds, man. We're up front. And, you know, the dudes were really enjoying it too. Like, sometimes even we were more vocal than the ladies that night. But it was just so much fun. I got to shake his hand after the show and just tell him how much I enjoyed his music. And I had seen him, told him I saw him in, I think, 07 in Chicago. And yeah, it was so much fun. And that just made my week. It was so awesome. And I stayed in the hotel in Easton and got up early that morning and went down, drove about an hour and change to my parents' house, got them some breakfast from Chick-fil-A, sat with them for a bit, and then came back on Saturday and just kind of chilled. And yeah, folks, that's about, I can give you a TV recommendation. I saw the new A.D. Bryant Hulu series called Shrill. That was really solid. It's only 6 episodes, so you can knock that out quick. Dramedy about a young woman, I guess, like, finding herself and starting to have confidence in who she is as a woman, and some funny scenes in it, it's good. It's like Hulu is starting to step their game up a lot with their programming, especially like the last two things I've seen, Pen 15 and Shrill. So they're both really good. So I'm glad that I dumped MoviePass and went to Hulu, because that's what I should have been doing all along. MoviePass was good while it lasted, but it's not very good anymore. So let's get to Jason Lawhead. Jason was on the show, I want to say 2014 he was on the show, maybe so like 5 years ago. And it was one of the longest episodes that I had ever done at that time. And we just kind of shot the shit on his origin story in sports. And I'd been wanting to have him back on the show for a good almost 3 years because Jason is from the Cleveland area, and was always, we were talking about, you know, the Cavs coming back, winning the championship, and the Indians almost winning and everything like that. So it was just just wanted to have him back for a while. And then with this Odell Beckham trade, I said, I got to reach out to him and try to make it happen. And he said, hey, when? He said he was available. I was like, hey, you want to do it tomorrow? I texted him on Wednesday, and we ended up doing it the next day on Thursday. and we had a great conversation. This is very sports heavy, so for the two women that listen to the show, it's sports heavy, but Jason is very knowledgeable, and I always like to talk to people that are just almost encyclopedic with their knowledge, like guys like Morgan Campbell, Jason's one of them, Michael Felder, people that just really know their shit when it comes to sports and the things around it. So it's kind of like you just set them up with a question and you let them go and you get all this insight. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the great Jason Lawhead. I try to get in as much as possible from just to vary it up because, you know, New York, you got so many comics, but still you want to get other people, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Try to get
You've
more.
Done a great job with this thing, man. Congrats.
Thanks, man. I'm trying, you know. So are you gigging in Vegas now? Are you working on your show or?
Yeah, I'm just doing a week at the Laugh Factory.
Okay. How's it going so far?
It's good, man. I'm working with Don Gavin, you know, like Boston legend from like that way back when crew, like when stand up stood out, you know, it started like Leary and Lenny Clark and those guys. He's a really cool dude, man. He, 72, he's still doing it, you know, and he's, you know, doing it well and he's active and he moves around and fucking, you know, he kind of lives like he's in his 50s, man. It's really cool to see a guy at 72, still having fun, doing it, being funny, being active, you know, active enough to, you know, move around, stay up at night, do two shows a night, stick around, hang with the young guys, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, you have to do something that keeps your mind going and stay active.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of guys at that time of the game, in stand-up are either dead or, you know, out of it if they're not, you know, celebrity on shit.
Yeah, just even in life, you know, when you get that old, like I try to hopefully get my parents to do more shit, but they're getting up there, though.
Yeah, you know, my mom and dad have stayed pretty active. They're in their 80s, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been a good influence on that shit. But yeah, you got to do it. That's what I'm finally battling age right now. I can feel the constant battle. You know, I'm keeping myself in pretty decent shape for, you know, my age and whatever. But, man, the battle is just, it's always uphill. Even when you're fucking, you know, dieting and feeling right, you still never feel good. You don't. When you quote-unquote feel good, dude, you still feel like shit. I don't give a fuck, man. Old is old. And getting old is just, it's just a, you know.
Yeah. I turned 39 last month, and I just... I'm just, it's like driving. I can't drive. Like, I have to get sleep before I drive. Like, I was noticing this weekend. Like, I had planned on, like, Friday night, I just planned on going to a movie and chilling after work. And then I got a call about working a club, and I was like, yeah, of course I'll do it. Then I just went home and took a shower and drove down and then did two shows, and it was late at night. And the club was like an hour away from my place. Drove back, got home at like 1:30, 2 o'clock, then got up and then went down to Maryland to see my parents. And, it was a lot. It's just...
Yeah, man, that's when you know you're getting old, when you can't drive home.
Yeah, I hate the feeling of getting tired. I was on my way back from my parents' house on Sunday and I had to pull over and get a Coke, like to just give me some of that energy.
Yeah, I think I drink enough coffee during the day now to just always keep me awake.
Yeah.
Like my body knows, like it knows what kind of like pace I need to be at with coffee throughout the day. Like I just went down to the cafeteria and got another one right before you called.
Like, okay.
I was like, all right, I'm gonna go get a muffin and a cup of coffee. That keeps me usually going for like drives and shit. And
yeah,
but I'm already kind of a high strung personality, so
yeah, you are.
I don't have a problem staying awake. That's not. I'm just always just like joints, muscles, where, you know, this attaches to that, stomach, intestines, you know, how I feel about, you know, the shit I'm going to take. I'm always just like feeling like shit about those kind of things.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I feel the age.
Sure. Yeah. I just need to take my ass back to the gym and just actually feel better. Cause I was just talking to a coworker. She was like, yeah, I got to go back to the gym, and she's in good shape, but she's just sitting all day at the computer. Is just, it's not healthy. Like, it's just,
well, it's not what our bodies were made to do. And that's one thing I try to do, is walk a lot, and being, you know, free, like a comic, you know, you can take, like, I, like here in Vegas, like, during the days I have all day, so I go and walk around through hotels and the one that attaches to this one and up and down the streets, and I try to stay, and I got a 32-year-old fiance, so
yeah,
you know, chasing after her, it's like having a, you know, chicken loose in the house. I swear to God. I swear to God, it's like I don't know whether I'm engaged. I'm training for Creed, or am I engaged? What am I doing here? I can't. Okay, you know. So, I mean, I've been lucky to stay in fairly decent shape for 46 now, but and I also ref basketball too on the side. So if I'm not on the road,
oh, that's good.
I ref like some youth league and some different associations out here, and when I'm not on the road and stuff, so I get some runs in and I get up and down the court, and that keeps me in pretty good shape.
That's good. Are you based in San Diego now, or
San Diego now? Yeah, I moved down there last summer after like 8 years in LA.
And, that's cool.
My fiance owns a business down there, so we had a, you know, I'm a little old fashioned. I want to make sure before I got engaged, we were like living together, you know, had our own place. So
sure.
I kept the place in LA for a little while. Oh. You know, both places to, you know, it was like using it or Airbnb in it. But even when you like Airbnb it, it's kind of a pain in the ass, even when that's going well, because you got to kind of just do shit. So
sure.
I eventually was just like, I'm getting out of it when the lease was up. So
yeah,
I'm just home based out of there, work the road out of there. And you know, I still got like 8 years of guys, couches I can crash on in LA. So I still, you know, pop up there every few weeks and for a few day stretches, you know, do a spot or two, show face.
That's cool. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do more of now this year. For the last 2 years, it's really been like a lot of like, thankfully, finally getting acting work and then doing like road gigs in the tri-state area. Because the fear for me is just, even though I don't think I will become that guy, but just those road guys that you're kind of afraid of, if you ever do one of the, like, you just... Like, I'm not going to be, it's not like you're afraid of him, because, like, I don't want to be talking about Monica Lewinsky, you know, whatever my version of Monica Lewinsky is, you know?
Yeah.
And just like, just.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like you kind of do what you do till you feel like you don't want to be doing that part of it, right? And I think that's where eventually you just got to make, that's got to be the choice. Like what is your willingness of, you know, what's your directory or path you want to take, and, you know,
right,
how long are you willing to take that? And I think that just comes like, that's like, I think, like, you know, it's I think comedy for every comedian, obviously every path is different, you know, every path to success, every path to mediocrity, every path to quitting, it all has a different path, right? Like, no matter what comedian you are under those ranks, you know.
Yeah,
but I think that a lot of us, I think, inherently, we're a lot like the athlete in a way, where it's like you play until there's that day maybe that just says, you know, I'm, it's time. It's time to either not play or not play this way, or, you know, you know, there's this time. I think we all have that at some point. We all know in our depths of who we are, like.
Yeah.
Whether when we say no mas, or I'm going to, you know, stop performing for writing, or I'm going to stop performing for a radio gig, or whatever it is.
Sure.
You know, we.
Yeah.
Like that athlete that finally just says, you know, or, you know, I can't play for this team anymore after all these years.
Right. Yeah. I think for me, like, it was this week was where it's like, oh, I wanted to do this new bit. And then I was just saying to myself, like, you have to do this bit. Because if you don't, you're wasting your time. You know,
yeah.
you can't go like pay all these tolls and pay for parking and do all this shit and not do this new bit in a club. Like I said, fuck it. I knew what I was going to set it up with. I had the structure, but then I did it and I got it out and it felt so good. Like it was just like, this is why I do it. Like this is, so I think as long as I still have that spark of like that excitement to like tell this joke all day and to get there and to not lay up on it, you know, just go with the driver and hit it, you know, down the fairway and just see what happens and live with the results. You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, like, you know, I've been working on a lot of stuff. This is a long week here in Vegas, and we do two shows a night. It's a Monday through Sunday, and I've been able to work on a lot of stuff through, you know, and that's the idea. Like, it's like, what am I doing all these 14 shows for, you know, yada, yada, and I got to do this. So last night, like I was pacing back and forth, but it's also like, ah, it's Vegas. You know, these people are paying $30-some a ticket. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a feature. I do have a job to do. They brought me in here to be really funny too. So, you know, you're weighing that, you're pushing, tugging the war.
Yeah.
But I went off and I still did this bit. I went on this rant about these parents that pay for the college tuition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it felt great. Like, 'cause it got laughs. People, like, it was a bit unorganized and it was ranty and it was, you know, there was a few things that may have been harsh in what I said in that rant.
Yeah.
But the people were in agreement of what my frustration was. And, you know, it got laughs in pockets. It got laughs where you say where you need it. Like, and it got some, even the ooze is reaction enough, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
And they were with me on it. And I followed it. And even Don Gavin told me, you know, when I went back, the host goes up and does a few more minutes in between, and he was like, hey, that was great, you know, the way you just spit that out. He's like, you know, it's good that you try that new stuff out there. He's like, you know, he kind of said this, like, I wish I still had the balls to do that, you know? And
yeah.
I was like, that's awesome, dude. That made me feel like, you know, no matter what the kicks in the road are and how many times I feel like, fuck this, you know,
yeah.
Fuck, what am I doing here? I was telling my girl last night on the phone after that, you know, like, just like that was, you know, I knew, like, I'm like, there's tons of fuel in this tank, you know?
Yeah,
there's still tons
yeah.
of fuel in this tank. And I just revved the engine last night really good with something that came up that day. And I had a really good piece of comedy for it. And now I can look at it and be like, dude, I can look at that little video or the audio and be like, this is how this is going to get better and under control.
Yeah.
I'm going to fucking tap into this part of it, you know? And
yeah.
It kept me up at night. You know,
yeah.
I should have drove you home. I should have drove you home from your gig last night.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I think you have to keep challenging yourself and making, and whatever you do, like, obviously the people that listen to these things, they know we're comics and we talk about this shit, like ad nauseum, but I think it's helpful to me to talk to other comics about process and about taking risks and, you know, making those adjustments. And it, 'cause I always feel like that's the fun part. Like, yeah, you want to do the show and you want to kill and all that stuff, but it's also fun trying to figure out how to get those laughs and how to, you know, put something together. I think that's where most of the fun is for me, and it's always been, and even like in theater, it was always like that. Like the rehearsal process was always the most fun for me, I would say, you know?
Yeah. You know, I got some great advice not long ago, and I tried it, you know, it's easier said than done when you tap into, you know, you say, oh, I'm going to tap into that piece of advice.
Mm-hmm.
But, there was a moment as, you know, as I grew a little bit, working with Bill and opening for him, you know, some years ago for a nice little chunk of a couple of years, I got to do a lot of shows with him.
Sure.
And he was there for a lot of the growth of me, you know, being the guy that was able to see what I was doing. I was on stage doing what I was doing, but you can't really, I mean, you can feel your growth as a performer, there's no doubt, but you can't really, you're not in the other shoes looking at you performing, right?
Right, right.
So, he was able to see a lot of just the growth from his perspective.
Sure.
And a little bit of things. And one thing he told me one time after a certain set that I had this wild set, and I forget what theater we were doing, and it was just like one of these moments where I kind of escaped and just fell into a moment. Like I didn't even, there was no idea of here's my material, here's where I'm going, this is where I'm heading with this, you know, these, it was just this moment of freelancing and free thinking and spitting out something that was just like fresh on the topic or whatever it was. I can't even remember it all, but he pointed it out to me after the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agreed with him in the moment. I went, you're right. Like that was, he's like, you were in this moment. You just let this moment happen. And you let your funny, you know, your ideas of what you think about take over, da, 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 da. And so that, you know, that's a great way to evolve as a comic is just allow yourself, you know, you go up there knowing that these are the jokes, you have material, this is 15 or 20 or 30 of whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
but just don't leave that behind. And, so like last night was one of those moments. I often try to tap into that idea when I'm trying to brave out a nice big new chunk or something that it's like, okay, this isn't just a new joke. This is a new chunk. And if it doesn't land, it's going to be a few minutes of cricket. Like I'm going into this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm going into this either being funny, having some, you know, potential, or mm-hmm. a long bout of me looking like an asshole on stage.
Yeah.
Looking like a complete dickhead, believing mm-hmm. in something that isn't funny, you know, so, but, so instead of, you know, instead of worrying about that,
yeah.
I just go, step up there and fall into a moment and don't be scripted. Let the fucking emotion, let the live show, the emotion, the people, their faces, their reactions to anything up until that, you know, let that be the whole, you know, kind of canvas.
Sure.
And and don't even worry about it. If it is crickets for the 2 minutes or the 3 minutes or whatever that chunk is, you know, move on. You know, you're funny. You got funny stuff. Just, you know, play it up. You're a pro. You can comfortably bomb. Don't let it, you know, all just do all that stuff, what you're trained to do. All this, you know, back that up with all the stage time, you know, you've had experience, and then just, you know, walk the walk, I guess.
That's true. It's just that commitment. I was talking to some comics a couple nights ago, and they're saying, yeah, you know, it's like, I hate to, she was one comic saying, you know, like, I don't want to commit to these act outs when the crowd was cool, but they were just kind of timid and quiet. It was in the mm-hmm. Vintage Lounge at Gotham. And a lot of times,
okay, yeah.
If it's not packed, like that room is that's one of my favorite rooms in the city that they let me play, you know,
yeah.
but like, it's sort of like, it is kind of light, you know, and one comic was saying, if they can't see other people laughing, then they'll get scared. You know, like it, or to laugh, like if it's dark, then people will be more excited, more prone to laugh. But they can see other people, so they're kind of like timid.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's a psychology to the audience. That's why, you know, room setup and room seating is so important to, you know, giving the show a better chance. There's no doubt. I always believe that.
Yeah.
You know. That's the one thing you get, you know, the challenge with rooms outside of like clubs that are designed with like, you know, when the audience member sits down, they feel like they know they're in a place of performance.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right?
So.
Yeah. It's like I was, because I never.
And then when there's lights on the crowd, they definitely know that they can be seen.
Yeah. Because I didn't even think about that in that room, because I do love that room, but I was just like, oh yeah, that is kind of true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So, you know, that there are certain rooms, and, you know, that's the one thing about rooms. Rooms tend to be better places for the stand and delivers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and whereas a comedy club, a wider stage, real stage lighting, all of those elements that put the audience member in a atmosphere where they feel like this is a performance. Anything
right.
could happen here. Magic could happen here. Music could happen here. Comedy could happen here. They maybe let themselves kind of trust the act out or the more demonstrative kind of selling the bit type stuff than just kind of the Todd Barry style that you can kind of stand at the mic stand and, you know, bomb, 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 bomb you with, like, just, you know, and deliver jokes. I think there's all kinds of, like, those kind of rooms that just kind of pose that challenge, you know, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that doing all the different kind of types of rooms help because at least I feel like they're going to help me to not be that hack comic that I'm afraid of becoming, even though I really don't feel that I will, but I just, that's just a thing that I fear, that's because I see those guys. Like, one time I did I think this was like the middle of last year, I did this show in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey, in the basement of a church, and it was just these guys, these older comics, that they were just, some of the stuff they were doing is just like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton jokes. You know, I don't know.
Well, I think as long as you keep writing jokes and keep telling, your story and your angle, I don't think that you'll ever become hack. I think a lot of those guys just at that point are just, leaning back on lazy and what knows will get the chuckles enough to get them whatever work that gets them that kind of work. And, and deep down they probably understand what they're doing, but, that's what you worry about, like the no turning back point. Like, some guys play too long. like the athlete that we were talking about. Like sometimes the fire burns out. Some guys don't know. I mean, there's a lot of Ricky Hendersons out there, but just weren't as good as Ricky Henderson. That's the problem.
Right. I would listen to that podcast, the 30 for 30, Ricky Henderson Won't Stop or something like that. I forget what it was, but it was a 30 for 30 that he did that was actually pretty good.
I'm sure everything Ricky did was great. Even playing, winter ball in his 50s, he was still, he was still prepared to play every day. Can you imagine what kind of money he'd get? The Bryce Harper's getting this money.
Oh my God.
Kind of money Ricky Henderson would get. He'd still be holding out. Ricky would be negotiating in third person right now.
Did you see that coming? Him going to Philly?
I mean, when it started taking so long, I thought maybe he was going to play some other big surprise. I thought maybe he was going to go for a shorter deal with somebody funner, maybe even join the pod. At that point, I was like, well, maybe this guy's working something on a short train with the Padres, and then he'll go get another big splash after a 4 or 5, 6 year contract.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see, when it took that long, I never saw a 13 year guaranteed deal like that coming down the pike. I was blown away that he was able to demand and get all of that on. That's the rest of his career in Philadelphia. I mean, the Phillies have basically said,
I wonder, I guess they already love him, I guess.
Well, they're going to have to. It's getting, I said that Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia hasn't spent $330 million on its infrastructure in the last 13 years. They're giving it to an outfielder, for Christ's sake. I mean, fix a sidewalk in that town,
Oh, man.
I don't know. It's just insane, but...
I want to talk about what happened this week with the Browns, but before I get to that, I kind of want your,
have we been recording this whole time?
We have been, yeah, for about 20.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. I didn't even know. I thought this was still just the talk before.
Oh, no, the pre-production.
I don't know. We just got on the phone and started chatting, and I didn't even know we were even starting the show. Okay, cool.
Oh, my bad. Usually I say we're starting now, but then we were just kind of going, and then
I kind of figured we were using some of this for the show, but I was just kind of making a hard time.
What I was thinking, I guess how I want to do this, because I wanted to, because we were texting and back in 2016 when the Cavs won, and I was really happy. I was really happy for you.
I know you were really cool, man. I was always getting back to you. I mean, I was getting a million of them.
Dude. And I was rooting for LeBron and everything, but I want you to talk about what that meant for you as a fan, what it mean, and then on a macro level, what it means for the city of Cleveland, and then talk about like what you think is happening now that he left. Just kind of talk about it for a bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, obviously it was huge. It was important. I think that at the end of the day, with LeBron coming back,
mm-hmm.
see, that was the first hurdle in the whole thing.
I remember you saying it when you did my podcast in 2013, 2014.
No, that summer he came back.
You said he was coming back. You were the first person to say that.
Yeah. Well, I had gotten some info after, you know, that finals that they lost to San Antonio immediately afterward. I wouldn't have spread that rumor unless I knew this guy was just such a reliable source. He's so close to Dan Gilbert and in the cast program. So I was confident in saying it then, but going back to that, just for the Cleveland person that identifies with not just the Cavs, but all of Cleveland and everything that we've been through. If you're a diehard sports fan of the town and a fan of the city, mm-hmm. and you feel like that's your home, there was a lot of validation when LeBron came back.
Mm-hmm.
First off, that almost felt like a bit of a championship there. To know that, you know, sure, he left and we all hated him, and some people burned his jerseys, and I couldn't even look at an NBA basketball game for 4 years. I mean, it was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he came back, how he wrote the letter, the way he was forthright and just like, hey, let's get to work, and you know, I'm going to do the best I can for the city, and he came back, and then he fulfilled this championship against this team that, you know, beat us, and then they had 73 wins, and we're down 3-1. And the way they finished off that series was just this, like, finally us, you know, finally we're the guy that does something. You know, we're always the one who blows the 3-1 lead. We're always the one that you know, has the best team like the Indians and don't win at all. Like, we, you know, so finally, like, that was just this, it was this never-ending parade. Anybody who was alive long enough to feel any type of pain in Cleveland sports and then got to go through that, we'll never forget that feeling, you know?
Right.
And I think it paved the way for all of us, most of all of us. You're always going to have a certain percentage, but I would say when he left for Miami, there was a 3-4% of Clevelanders that were like, hey, that's fine. He didn't do anything wrong. I love LeBron. He was great. I'll still be a fan of his in Miami. Just because, whatever, right?
Sure.
And then 97% were like, fuck that guy. And I think at this time, it was the other way around. I think 97% were like, you know what? The guy came back. He gave us a title. If you would have told me 20 years ago that one day we're going to have, you know, the next Jordan, or what people compare it to, the greatest ever, the guy in the conversation who's going to play 11 years in our city, take us to 5 NBA finals, which we'd have never been to up until that point, and then win us a championship, we would have all signed on for it. But he's going to leave, and he's going to go play for the Lakers and the Heat at 2 different. We would all have been like, whatever. Wait, he's going to play for the Lakers and the Heat and still play 11 years for us? Who is this asshole? Right? Like, you know. Yeah. Yeah. We'll sign. I mean, does he know he's got to play 11 years for us? Like, yes, of course we would have. And I would have signed on for that. So, and now I think most people weren't rooting against him. I think most people, like me, that really have an allegiance to Cleveland sports and really feel it when they win and lose, probably thought, I hope he can go to L.A. and put a team together good enough to knock the piss out of the Warriors. Because I'll tell you what, here's the funny thing. After the 4 years he was in Miami, when we had no notion that we were, you know, we were a basement team when he was gone, I hated the Heat more than I ever thought I could hate a team. I really did. I was like, I hate the Heat. I don't want to see him win any games. I don't, all because of that. And then when LeBron came back those 4 years we had to go up against Golden State, I'm going to tell you something. I hate Golden State still more today than I ever hated the Heat. And LeBron doesn't even play for us. We're not even any good. We don't even have a chance to beat Golden State. So I was actually like, listen, I hope he can go there and put a team together. I don't think he can. I think,
no,
you know,
he can't.
I think that ship has sailed. I don't even think they have a chance in the 4 years he's there to do anything. But I was hoping, and listen, am I rooting for him? No, I don't really care. But am I rooting against him? No, not right. like I was.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of what he left. And right now, I got to tell you, what's funny is the whole thing comes full circle. You know, we draft Baker Mayfield. He is the answer to our problems. Now we go get Odell Beckham Jr. All of a sudden, the Browns, which have been the laughing stock of pretty much pro major sports in the last 20 years. I mean, you know, outside of the NFL, I mean, the whole goddamn, you know, major four sports are at the kind of right on Main Street right now is one of the teams that people, I mean, their odds just went from like, you know, 25-8-1 overnight to win the Super Bowl. And the Lakers are going to have a worse year than they had last year.
Yeah.
And it's almost funny that you would think that the ball player in LeBron deep down probably wishes he was back in Cleveland.
He might.
The ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Not the father and the businessman and the guy drinking red wine and making 2 Chainz records. But the ball player that's still one of the greatest. You know, he's not washed up. It's not like he's like, whatever, I can't physically do it anymore. This is fine. I'll play for you. He's still at the top of his game physically, but there's only maybe, a couple more years of that LeBron James, and he knows it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to have to spend the last couple of them on bad basketball teams.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Do you think anybody will go play with him?
Well, I don't think they can get the guy that they need to.
Who do they need? David Durant, Davis, or who do they need?
Well, Durant's not going to go there. Come on.
He's going to go. Where is he going to go?
Durant's going to go either to the Knicks or back to the Warriors. Or if he went anywhere, he might go do what LeBron did and go back to OKC.
Mm.
I don't think he will. I think he's going to go to the Knicks. I do.
Now, what?
I don't think, and if he does go to L.A., here's the funny thing is, the most attractive place to go in L.A. right now is the Clippers. I mean, they've got all the cap space, and they're an actual playoff team. I mean, you're talking about a 6-seed guy. Jerry West is working for them now. This is the whole funny thing. The ironic thing is Jerry West may be the culprit to the Lakers never doing anything. And as a matter of fact, I was the first one to call this over a week ago. Now people are talking about it. They may be better off trading LeBron James at the trade deadline next year. If they can, because he doesn't have a no trade clause, and at $35 million, you're getting a guy that is starting to miss games. He missed more than he ever missed. Right now, you're getting a guy who's a former 6-time All Defensive player, but hasn't won one, hasn't been on an All Defensive team in going on 5 years. Next year, he'll be going on 6. So you got a guy that can make great defensive plays once in a while, but doesn't play defense anymore. And I think Anthony Davis is a lot like that. So even if they get, I think the one guy that they can get that's still on the board is Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
But I think that even though he may engage more defensively right now than LeBron does because of just his age, I don't think he's a go get you and show you how to play defense. Here's when the Lakers' fortunes went down the toilet. At the end of the day, when they didn't land Paul George and or kind of found out Kawhi Leonard wanted no part of playing over here. Mm-hmm. Because what happened was they lost out on potentially the top 2-way players in basketball.
Yeah.
And LeBron James hasn't had to play with really young guys since he was a really young guy.
Right.
He went to Miami and it was Wade's locker room and he learned how to be a locker room guy. By the time he went to Cleveland again, he had veterans come along. Kyrie was a veteran by then who was a really talented one, even if he was a young kid who he had to deal with. Kevin Love came over. The J.R. Smiths came over. The Kyle Korvers. So, you know, if they went into a 10-game sludge, he could light a fire under their ass, and they were pros, and they could not take it personal. They can get their stuff back together. But, you know, the Kuzmas, the Harts, the Balls, the Ingrams, he doesn't want to be the guy to show them how to play defense. So had they landed a Paul George or a Kawhi Leonard, then you would have had a guy that said, all right, guys, I'm going to show you. I'm going to lead the brigade. I'm going to show how we play defense. We're going to let LeBron be LeBron. He's going to make some great blocks once in a while and some steals, but we're going to be the guys to do this, and he's going to get us the ball, and we're going to win games. Well, they don't have that, and Anthony Davis isn't that guy. So even he comes over, he'll block some shots and all for him when you bring it down the paint, but he's not, you know, strapping it on and going in and being an all every day, every minute, let's play defense and let's be a team leader, vocal guy out there. And that's what they're going to miss. At the end of the day, you know, Ingram, he can't play defense. He can't rebound. Kuzma can't play defense. He can't rebound. The best defender on the team is actually Lonzo Ball. And he's not physically imposing. He's just got a head for the game. He knows where to be on the defensive glass. And, you know, he knows how to sneak into passing lanes. He's a cerebral player enough so he knows where switches happen and how to do that and deal with pick and rolls. But other than that, what are they ever going to do? And there's nobody out there in the offseason that can help them. And they got $35 million a year tied up in LeBron. If they fire Luke Walton, who wants to come coach to that disaster and that roster?
Right.
You got Magic Johnson sitting here absolutely putting this franchise back to where they had it with Kobe Bryant's last contract. A bunch of money and a guy that isn't really helping your young guys get better, and you have nobody around him, and you're going to be 10 years away before you know it. So you're better off trading him at the deadline next year, opening up all that cap space, getting some pieces, because the Denver Nuggets will trade for him, and the Phoenix Suns will trade for him right now. Right now they would.
Do you think Paul George didn't want any of this at all? Do you just think he just didn't want L.A.? Like, he just didn't want to go?
I think Paul George knew what LeBron would do to the coaching situation and the roster situation. I don't think Paul George and his people, I think they were smart enough to around him to go, let me tell you something. You stay here playing for Billy Donovan in this city that loves you, mm-hmm. and guess what? You'll be an MVP because you're going to be a Defensive Player of the Year, and you're going to be a guy. Look, he's. I mean, as great of a year as Harden's having, Paul George should be the league MVP. He's second in the league in scoring, and he's probably the Defensive Player of the Year on an OKC team that still has a chance to get to the two spot, three spot.
Over Giannis?
I think so.
Okay.
I think when you look at the lack of everything that OKC has, they've got two scorers and no bench. And the fact that where they are positioned and the games that Paul George has had this year in some of the wins that they've pulled out and where they are in the standings for being destroyed in bench point scoring almost every night, not getting much out of the front line and Lewis scoring. They've got a couple of good defenders, but they have no bench. And I think him and Westbrook are having amazing years, and Billy Donovan is getting, you know, no credit for the job they're doing. And they're going to be dangerous in the postseason in a 7-game series, mm-hmm. because Adams controls the middle. They can exploit a lot of one-on-one matchups, and they can hurt you in pick and roll situations. If they can get any type of bench point scoring, that's why I think that they're going to get hurt eventually by a Houston or a Golden State. But I think that they would, you know, make life miserable on them in a 7-game series this year, particularly. I just think that they don't have the bench point scoring stat is going to hurt them in the long run. But if they can somehow miraculously get that figured out, they could be real dangerous.
I want to ask you another Laker question, and then maybe an overall playoffs question. Do you think LeBron's still hurt?
He's probably not 100% because that groin is a nasty, nasty injury. It's what put me out. I stopped playing at 40 because of a groin. Mm-hmm. I know that he has the best doctors and cryogenic machines and everything else, but that is not a fun injury. It still nags me today. I mean, 6 years later, I still have to do extra stretches. And if mm-hmm. I go a few days without, it's miserable.
Yeah.
I think the novice person that never really plays the game or hasn't really laid into a groin injury, they hear that when they're like, oh, this guy's out for a month with a groin. They're like, yeah, I'm out, what a pussy. Oh, no. Basketball and a groin. I mean, I had to cancel shows for 2 weeks when I did this to myself. I couldn't even get up the side stage, like three steps up the stage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is he a little hurt? He might be, but at the end of the day, I think it would have behooved him if he was really hurt to have a medical team come out there and say, hey, this guy's really hurt. And probably never come back when he came back. And then at least there would be less drama around this collapse. You could at least say LeBron went out for the year. But then there'd be the, oh boy, he's out for the year. And then, you know, you'd have, I guess, half dozen ones, 60 other, depending on what story you wanted to print. Is he ever going to be okay? You know, is he taking it too easy in L.A.? Did he get hurt because he's not fucking taking his body seriously? They would have just got all over him for that. So Yeah, he's still playing. I mean, the guy's still, like, you know, 30-some points the other night, 8, 10, right. 12, you know, triple-double. I mean, it's, I don't think he's hurt to the point where it's affecting, you know,
his,
the team.
His play, yeah.
I don't think that you could ever think to say they're not winning or they're playing bad because LeBron's still hurt. No, not at all. That team is a train wreck.
Yeah,
I mean, they haven't played defense all year. They haven't out. They haven't rebounded. They haven't stopped anybody in the paint. And LeBron's been the first guy to quit on defense all year long. If you, see, I live in L.A. now. It's funny because now he's out there, and I see him on our Fox Sports West feed every night. So I get every single Laker game, whether they're on national TV or not.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's the first one to just walk down, quit on. You know, look at a guy for not passing it to him. You know, like what the fuck? I mean, so they are in a, you know, and that's the problem is. Nothing happening at the trade deadline except basically a bunch of guys being rumored to be traded. So then after the trade deadline, all you had was guys like Hart and Kuzma and Ingram. They're just auditioning for a job. I mean, they've been thrown under the bus. So they're just trying to put the ball in the basket and fill the stat sheet.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows where I'm going to be next year, but I want to have, you know, some leverage, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole team concept went out the door. Luke Walton's a dead man walking. He knows that he doesn't know whether he's going to be fired now or tomorrow or next minute. So how do you even coach a team? And now you got Jerry West over in the Clippers consulting them, which puts Doc Rivers back to where he should be, a full-time coach only. They've dumped all these contracts. And I'm going to tell you something. I predict that the Lakers don't get anybody. And I predict that if Kawhi Leonard does want out of Toronto, let's just say that's not where he wants to be. He's happy this year. They're trying to win a title. He'll do everything he can. Maybe he wants to be in Toronto, whatever. But if he leaves, he's going to the Clippers. And I think Anthony Davis and his people will be able to. See, the funny thing is now with all the fucking hangups here and not making the deal at the deadline, the Clippers have a lot more attractive offers to send to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. Because they've got books opened up. Jerry West, they were able to get Griffin, Paul, DeAndre Jordan. They traded Tobias Harris, the best player this year. Got him off the books.
It got rid of his son.
Cap space.
Doc got rid of his son.
Under the sun, and they still got a good winning team. They're still the sixth seed in the West with a championship coach. They're getting a new arena, their own arena. They're not going to be renting out the Staples Center.
Oh, really?
Second trick pony anymore. Yeah, they're getting a new arena in El Segundo. And so there is a reason to be a Clipper instead of a Laker. Because then now you got to come and deal with, basically, like, hey, listen, these guys are handled by people, right? Like, why did people, like, why would Paul George send them? Okay, go Golden City. Don't think that Paul George is sitting down and he's getting advice from the people that are his best advisors, and they're going, guy, you're going to be an MVP. You're going to be you know, and you know what you're going to be? Second fiddle to LeBron, and when the full coach gets fired that he doesn't like, and if the second coach he doesn't like gets fired, like, where are we going to be? We're going to be a guy living in L.A. with a bunch of distractions, and you're not going to be getting the max out of your talent. And you're not going to be first-team All-NBA. You're not going to get – and what can we do in Oklahoma City? We can fill this contract with a bunch of guarantees and bonuses, and you're going to make All-NBA, All-Defensive Team, and you're going to be an MVP candidate.
So it's not people afraid of the scrutiny that comes with playing with LeBron.
Well, I think the other thing is this is the other thing is this is if you're being advised too, you're going, hey man, LeBron's already, his best days are behind him. And they are. I mean, as great as he still is, his best days are behind him. The best player LeBron ever will be was, not is. You know, and he's still a great, great player. But now you're sitting there going, hey, man, by year two of this contract, this guy's 35. I mean, his kid's coming up. God knows. I mean, he's going to be, who knows what he's going to be coaching his kids, spending time. I mean, you know, is he focused? I just don't see it. I mean, and then you look at the other moves, like, you know, everybody's got responsibility. Magic Johnson, I mean, this guy passes on, you know, he takes Lonzo Ball over De'Aaron Fox, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. You know, they let Julius Randle go in free agency, who's averaging 20 a game, and he gets his 20 a game, like, doing dirty work, you know, not like Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram is a first three quarters of the game score. There's tons of guys that can do that. They can go out and hit some swishes and some made buckets and maybe get, you know, something in transition and a couple of dunks in the first three quarters. Three-quarter scorers don't impress me. guys getting it the dirty way, like a Julius Randle does. They let Brooke Lopez go, who is actually the X factor, in my opinion. If the Bucks are going to win the title, it's because Brooke Lopez has been able to go in there and give an all-defensive performance underneath and free the Greek Freak out to be a guy running out on the outlet pass and on the fast break instead of being the guy, you know, the last one down there tipping it around for the rebound. You got Brooke Lopez doing that. That's another guy who can stop points in the paint and get rebounds, which is the worst thing that the Lakers can't do right now. So Magic lets him go in free agency and signs JaVale McGee, Tyson Chandler. I mean, then 2 years ago, he traded D'Angelo Russell, who ends up becoming an all-star. They got nothing for
Who'd have seen that? Saw that coming?
I mean, this is – but you know what? When you watch D'Angelo Russell's game, it's sad because when you watch a guy like D'Angelo Russell, they got him out of there to appease Nick Young. Are you kidding me? remember?
He told on me.
Remember?
Yeah,
like,
I remember.
Kyle Garvey told on me. He's a left-handed Kyrie Irving. Sorry that he told on you, Nick. Beat it. Hit the bricks. Take your stupid wife or girlfriend who you're cheating on with, Izzy, Dizzy, Dizzy, whatever her name is. Get her out of here, too. Look, D'Angelo Russell is a perfect fit. He's like a left-handed Kyrie. He would have been great next to LeBron. Julius Randle is like a Tristan Thompson, but with offensive skills and finishing around the basket. I mean, these are guys that would have suited up with LeBron perfectly.
Yeah.
And now he's just got a bunch of dudes spread around, standing around, looking at him like some of those Cavs teams that, like, when everybody was hurt. The Lakers look like when the Cavs have everybody hurt.
I got the Houston Golden State game on mute right now on NBA TV. Did they?
Oh, from last night?
From last night.
Yeah, what I saw that.
Do they have a chance? Is Chris Paul too old? Is James Harden tired?
What I worry about Houston in a 7-game series is all the dribbling. You know, here's what you can do.
Yeah.
In a 7-game series, you're going to be able to defend that. And eventually, Golden State did it last year. Mm-hmm. And is Houston good enough to beat Golden State? Yeah, I think they are. I think that they've got a good enough coach. I think the game has finally caught up to Mark D'Antoni. 15 years ago when he was in Phoenix, this style, like, the game changed when, like, basically you had to beat LeBron. The game changed to offense wins championships now. The Golden State has kind of changed that game.
Yeah.
D'Antonio was trying to play that ball 15 years ago. He was trying to play offense wins championships 15 years ago, but it didn't. Now the game has caught up to him, and he's got the talent to play it his way and to win, you know, that way. So I do think they're good enough. But my problem is with the manner in which they score points.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't the way Golden State does it, by everybody's hands touching the ball. Everybody's, in transition, it gets whipped around. The extra pass, the guy in the corner, It's 15 freaking dribbles. It's the whole shot clock with James Harden. And a step back and a fire shot. And if it's a miss, let's hope that it comes off to somebody near us. Or, you know. And I don't think you can play Golden State that way. You can beat a lot of teams that way. But they're going to have to find a way for that to be less of how they get their shots. I mean, I think there was a stretch this year where he scored 68 points, straight points, on non-assisted baskets. That's just him dribbling so long and then shooting. Whether it's a layup, going to the hole, or whatever. There's not even an assist on the basket. So they can't have it. They've got to have a better, assisted basket percentage. And in 7 games, you know, they're going to need home court advantage again, which, you know, they had last year and they still couldn't win it. I don't know. I just don't see it. I see the Warriors in the finals again, but I do think that the East could beat them.
You think the Raptors or the Bucks could beat them?
I think the Raptors or the Bucks, or if the Celtics somehow can be playing great basketball through the playoffs some way, if they just let's say this Celtics team just ends up being a playoff team. You know, sometimes you look and you go, oh, these guys are kind of a disaster. How the hell?
Well, see,
all this, they look terrible. And Tyree's on the floor, they're this record. And when he's off the floor, they're this record. And But the NBA regular season, the one thing we've learned is it looks nothing like the NBA playoff.
Exactly.
Season. So this team could just be a great playoff team. And Brad Stevens just might be, you know, sitting back waiting for this team to be in a seven-game series to coach him the way he wants to coach him effectively, and not, you know, Brooklyn on a Tuesday night and Sacramento on a Friday night and whoever else on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe once he gets the Philly, you know, Sixers boxed into a seven-game series, or Indiana or whoever it is, you'll see a team. And I think so. If we see the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals, that means they're playing good enough basketball to, yes, I think that they pose a matchup problem in a seven-game series, all things being equal. But, yeah, I think the Raptors right now. I like the Raptors because I think that they will be a seven-game playoff series team. I think they've got a lot of good pieces. And, you know, in years past, they always look like, oh, they're a number one seed, the Raptors, you know. But, you know, DeRozan and Lowry, that tandem in the backcourt, you know, just couldn't get it done. And in the years past, if Lowry scored 9 points or 11 points, that team was beat by 30. I mean, they had no chance. But with the personnel they have now, Kyle Lowry can just go out and be an effective point guard, and he can have an 8-point night, and that Raptor team could win by 10 or 15 points because they've got a lot of good players, and they play great defense. And the other thing I like about them beating the West is that they have a lot of guys with a lot of Western Conference minutes, big minutes, too. Mm. Leonard, Danny Green, Mark Gasol, Serge Ibaka. So, you know, and who knows, right? Like the last two NBA champion coaches were guys that won it in their first year. Steve Kerr won it his first year. Ty Lue won it in his first year. So, what's his name over in Toronto? Why not? Why can't it be him? You know,
they had a stretch when Kawhi was out, like maybe late last year or early this year, where they were winning without Kawhi. You know, you just kind of look up. You're like, oh shit. No, damn.
Yeah, they can win without Kawhi. And here's the other thing I like about it. I think at least going into a couple nights ago, and I think it's probably the same because most teams are playing their conference now on the way going out. Most road trips are done. I know that Brooklyn's on a big West Coast one, but that might be like one of the last ones. But the Raptors also have a better record against the West than Golden State has against the East, which that's an interesting stat.
Yeah, like those guys, like I remember when they were winning 3 years ago, the Bucks were the team that they always seemed to have trouble with that Golden State had trouble with, like, because those guys are tall and long, and they just call you know better than I do, you know, what that can do to them. But then you're like, now they got Kevin Durant, and KD didn't even play last night.
I mean, I like the Bucks. My problem with the Bucks is I don't know if the Bucks, if the Bucks get to the finals, I don't know if they've got enough perimeter scoring to take down a Golden State. I think that's the one thing they're missing. You know, Bledsoe is kind of a guy that I think, at the end of the day, Kerr will say, if you're going to beat us in this series, Bledsoe's going to have to be the guy to beat us, and we're going to go put Clay out on him, but we're also going to let him get shots, and we're going to try to keep everything out of the freak's hands, and we're going to, you know, harass him and follow him. We're going to switch Draymond from Cousins to KD. We're going to put every kitchen sink we have on him.
Sure.
Looney, we're going to put every minute we can. Yeah. And I just don't know if the Bucks, whereas, you know, the nice thing with Toronto, they're sitting in a position where they look back and they go, hey, 2 years ago, even when Golden State had KD in that game one, Spurs are up 20-some on the road. Kawhi's on pace to have like 45 in the third quarter, and Zaza Pachulia takes him out. You know, who knows what kind of a series that would have been just with Kawhi. So now the Raptors are sitting here going, you know what? We also have Mark Gasol, who is a highly skilled big man that can now draw Cousins far away from the basket. We can facilitate the half-court offense through the high post center that can pass. And if you foul him when we do go into him, he's a 75% free throw shooter, Gasol. So we've got that guy. We've also got four former all-defensive players, two defensive player of the years in Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol. Ibaka's a three-time defensive all-team defense. Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard. Now we got guys that can get out and chase you on the perimeter and stay there. We've got guys that know how to you know, switch defensively, do all that kind of stuff. Danny Green's a really nice key matchup for us. We can use him in a lot of ways. We can put him on Klay Thompson. We can put him on Steph Curry. We can slide him over on Iguodala. We have a lot of ways to defend you. And, right now there's guys on our side of the team that you've historically had problems with. You had problems with Marc Gasol 2 years ago when the Grizzlies had a 2-1 lead on you in the conference semifinals before Conley and Tony Allen got hurt. I mean, you know, Andrew Bogut couldn't stop Gasol. They were really having problems. So I like where Toronto is in that respect. That's where I just think Milwaukee's still a player or maybe playoff experience away or two to knock down a Golden State.
They're just sexy young team right now.
They're a sexy young team with a guy that, you know, might win the MVP or at least is going to finish in the top two or three. You know, you're right. But when you talk about, like, keys and matchups and guys that can really disrupt something that Golden State does, I think Toronto possesses more of those types of ball players, and they can get more rotations. They can get more rotations that keep them in the plus of the plus minus time. You know, I think they've got a second unit guys that can either play to an even or play to a plus against Golden State, where I don't think Milwaukee has enough of those guys over the course. You know, I don't think they're good enough in the game of runs to play with Golden State, whereas I think at Toronto and then at Boston, if Boston's playing really well, as I said, if they're in the finals, that means they're doing something right. And I would watch out because they possess a lot of, you know, weird matchups that can, complement. You know, there's a lot of different guys Boston has that can guard a lot of different guys, as far as the Currys and the Clays, especially the backcourt. You want to be able to try to bottle up that Golden State backcourt, because then what they have to do is they have to, like, force the ball into Kurt Durant quickly into the shot clock and get him ISO, and all of a sudden now they're trying to force him to get him the ball by 18 or 17 seconds. And if you can keep those guys, Thompson and Curry, checked and keep them guarded when they're moving without the ball, now you're forcing Durant to kind of be a one-man team, and that's the only way you're going to beat them. And Houston was able to do that for a long time in that series last year. And when that's one thing the Cavs had no personnel to ever do, was to make Durant a one-man team. And the reason he was able to just get everything so easy against us is because their guard flow was just got him the ball everywhere they wanted at any time on the shot clock and in every position he wanted it, at the elbow, on the wing. You know, I mean, he just killed us. But I think Toronto could probably be able to do that.
You got me excited about Toronto because I think, you know, obviously we know that that metaphorical light is going to turn on in come April, but just with these guys, when you talk about the veteran experience that they have, I'm looking at the roster right now, and it's just like, yeah. And the way you're talking about Gasol, it seems like he's still got more. It's like he has some gas in the tank still at 34. You know.
Well, yeah, and he's got gas in the tank, especially when you know. Here's the great thing. What does that? What do you? What happens in the NBA playoffs? No more back to backs, right? That doesn't exist. So now you got a guy that you're going, okay, we've got 28 to 30 minutes right here, right now, all the time on no back to backs. We know we're going to get a fresh Gasol in the game plan, one on one. You know, this is how we're going to play. Him against Brooklyn. And there's going to be some matchups. Sometimes you see a guy, Gasol's a perfect example, guys like that are perfect examples of guys that, you know, might get 30 minutes a game in one series and 14 minutes a game in another, just because certain rotations and certain teams go small, you know, longer than other ones. So, but I just like all the different ways, all the different looks Toronto can throw at you. They can give you, you know, they can start Gasol or they can bring him off the bench. Same with Ibaka, depending on the matchup. They can start the guy or bring him off the bench, and then they can give you a multitude of different rotations and always have scorers on the court and always have defenders on the court, right? And so that's important. I don't know. I just don't see Milwaukee having enough really good rotations in certain playoffs. And the East has gotten a lot better.
They have.
So you got the East that, you know, with LeBron's departure, you know, those franchises have stepped up. Philly has added and made themselves better. Obviously, with Boston, health-wise, you know, they should be better. You know, obviously, the record maybe not reflecting what they've done. But I still think when it comes playoff time, you know, Brad Stevens knuckles in the guys that he wants. And, you know, as long as there's not drama, as long as, you know, if Kyrie is sincere about, you know, wanting to just move forward and get past all this, then great. But if there is drama, obviously, maybe can't keep. I think if the Boston's going to have drama, you know, bet against them because there's just the East is too good.
That's what I was thinking. Like, because he did apologize. I saw somewhere where he apologized in a quote or something that he had. And it's like one thing about LeBron is that he took all these slings and arrows that guys like Kevin Durant and Kyrie and Anthony Davis don't fucking have to take anymore. It's not that serious. Like KD, I love KD. Like I think he's great. He's from my hometown area. So I always root for him. But it's like, dude, why are you so mad? Why are you mad? You know?
Yeah, it's like I think he's trying. I think KD is trying to kind of manufacture a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
To separate like the identity of him chasing a title. You know, I think that whole going to Golden State really kind of, you know, the press around that, the jokes everybody made. I mean, every day it was you know, if somebody won something, they're like, hey, heard KD's joining the whatever team. Hey, heard KD's joining Trump's campaign. You know, like
NBA Twitter
was,
is so
right?
Like, NBA Twitter is so great.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that is just a sensitivity. And I think, you know, manufacturing a chip on your shoulder of something else kind of deflects that attention and it kind of makes him an outlaw instead of like a softy, I think, in a way. I think Kyrie is just a, you know, ultra sensitive guy that has a lot of quirks and is, you know, a guy believes the earth's flat and, you know, he's got all these weird things. So I think when he finally became, you know, he never had to deal with it, right? Like when he was the leader in Cleveland, they were a 22-win team and he was just a fun highlight reel that they would go to at the end of a sports center to show you a top 10 play because the Cavs got beat by 30. And then when LeBron came over, there was no pressure. LeBron was the first microphone in his face. LeBron was the leader. He was the guy. If it went bad, it was always on LeBron and Kyrie could slide over to his locker and sneak out of there, right? And then he got to hit the shot and hold up the trophy, and LeBron got him there with the block shot and took him all the way to the promised land.
Yeah.
Kyrie was able to be right out there, you know, in a tie game with a basket looking bigger than a freaking ocean because LeBron had just made a block. Had Iguodala finishes that layup, you know, he's down two. That shot's not as easy to knock down.
Right. Nobody could hit a shot. So, nobody could on either team. Warriors or the Cavs could not hit a shot that lasts, what?
Yeah, there was like 4 minutes where they didn't score, right?
Right.
So, you know, and if you're down two and the Oracle's going bananas and now Golden State is going to send everybody to guard you at the three-point line with the place going nuts with a two-point lead, you know, I mean, in a tie game, when you're kind of playing a few more possessions, you know, you're sagging off a little. You want to see if he's going to go to his right, maybe try to make a signature move and, you know, finish at the basket. So he's got you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, now all of a sudden, it's his team. He's the A-dog. He's the big guy. Yeah, these guys, it's amazing all the things that LeBron can handle, you know, at the end of the day,
right,
compared to what some of these guys can't. And, you know, LeBron has his own quirks and his own issues with whatever and,
sure,
you know, how he deals with coaches and the front office. But, you know, I mean, the Lakers got to do something now.
Yeah.
It's this offseason. If they don't do something in this offseason, they're better off just trading him before the deadline. They really are. I mean, that's not just being one of these, like, oh, the Lakers. Like, that's being smart. That's just, like, doing what's right for your franchise with money. It's like, the Nuggets will pay for him. They want to win a title. They have enough pieces and draft choices and down the road. They have enough young pieces that are in place and enough cap room to go do that. The Suns would gift you everything except Devin Booker. And then they would say, look, we got LeBron with another kid that can score. Let's go get a couple free agencies. We'll give up all of our youth and all of our picks in the future. You know, I mean, so those are two teams right now, believe you me, that would make a great, generous deal for LeBron James. And there might be, by next year's deadline, a handful other ones that feel like hey, let's go buy him for a title and then figure it out, you know, and figure out his contract and figure out, you know. But
yeah.
At the end of the day, the Nuggets would extend him, and so would the Suns.
Now, I like that. I like that theory. But I also wanted to say, like, what does KD and Kyrie, what do they think would happen when they come to New York? If they come to New York, the media is going to be up their ass all the time.
Well, yeah. Not only are the media going to be up their asses, but you know, now you've got an owner over there that's a media disaster himself, right? So You've already got this. You've got an owner who's a media disaster that can be one at any minute. You've got a franchise that's just been, you know, has made head-scratching moves just for decades. I mean, just personnel-wise and draft-wise and contract-wise. And and the fact that you would now be the bona fide best player in the Eastern Conference, no doubt, there'd be no questions asked. And if you did go with a Kyrie Irving, I mean, I don't know how first year Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know how they don't escape the pressure of that if they don't get themselves to the Eastern Conference Finals. Kyrie, for what they've done in the last 5 years, if Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are both on the same team in the East and can't get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think that's a media disaster to the Knicks.
It is. And I worry about Kyrie's health, too.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is, you know, that guy's, you know, he's one drive to the basket from being out 60 games.
Yeah.
Always. Like that's easy. Like, he, like 60, 40, 50 games. Like, he's a Kyrie drive to the basket from always being out an extended period.
Yeah, I think he's...
I mean, anybody's a freak accident away from their career ending, but Kyrie is a legitimate every time he takes it to the basket. Could be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 8 weeks, a month, 2 months, whatever.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, dude. I want you to close it with just more, provide more insight on this Odell Beckham trade and what you think this means for the Browns. I know you touched on it earlier, but here, like, people are now, I guess this happens with any fan base, but just, and I barely listen to sports radio, but I had it on this morning and everybody's just like dogging Odell. Like, ah, he was a distraction. My boss even said, I was like, what do you think? I was like, she said, ah, he's a distraction. I said, well, I just hope they don't run Saquon into the ground, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you sit and think about it, I mean, I guess if I'm not a Giants fan, so, you know, whatever, those born biases of like, yeah, he's an idiot, knucklehead, you know, it's easy to say. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're sticking with a quarterback that, you know, I don't see anything left in the tank there. I mean, I don't see how Eli Manning takes another snap. I mean, but apparently they're willing to do that. So,
yeah.
When you took Saquon Barkley, you might as well. I mean, I guess when you take Saquon Barkley, why would you trade Odell Beckham Jr. is what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Because like you said, now what do you do? Like, you have Eli Manning and Saquon Barkley, and are you going to run him like every down, like or throw to him like every like so? And then you got a quarterback who's not like going to be Saquon Barkley's quarterback. You know why? I mean, you better take a quarterback this year. But then if you take a quarterback, people are going to go, what the fuck did they trade Odell Beckham for? You could have took a quarterback and then the next year had a quarterback ready. I mean, at the end of the day, I think you should take the best quarterback available and groom him for a year. Or if he takes the job over for Manning because it's untenable next year, then do that. But I think the Haskins kid from Ohio State, I think he's got a great NFL future. He's got a lightning rod arm, and he knows how to, you know, he's steady in the pocket. He's a good ball handler. You know, he hands it off. I think him and Barkley would work well together. I think he'd be a perfect fit for a guy, you know, when he's looking for that last out, you know, little dump pass, and having a running back like that to open up the passing game of anybody else you could sign or you eventually get to replace Beckham, or at least come close to it. But
oh, he's from Jersey,
I don't know,
too.
Giants have made some weird moves in the last few years, and I'm just fine. I'm sorry to not care, but I'm just finally so fucking amped about the Cleveland doing the right stuff here.
I just mean I'm just asking you what you think, because yeah. I feel like my fear for Saquon Barkley is just like, I hope he's not another Barry Sanders, like a generational great with no team around him.
Yeah, to just get stuck in purgatory for, you know, 8 or 10 years. That would be sad, because I really do think he's a generational back. And
yeah.
I was the one all year, last year at this time, I was harping about drafting him and, you know, taking him over Baker, taking him over anybody, taking number one, always take the, you know, I don't care. He's the kind of guy that if you ever needed, you know, in a jam and a certain big game and you had certain field position, you could run him out there and say, go return this punt. Go return this one right now.
Or even,
you know,
worse.
You're not our punt returner because we're not going to kill you. But you know what? They're punting from the 10. There's, you know, 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. This thing's going to land around the, go grab this one at the 50 and see if you can send it to the house.
Yeah.
This guy threw three touchdown passes at Penn State in the trick play option. I mean, you could throw this. This guy could throw the ball from 35, 40 yards out into the end zone on a nice ball. So, what he does, how he finds holes, the ability to catch and get yards after the catch, just the fact that he can, you know, you can line him up wide, you put him in the slot, you can put him, you know, next to you in the shotgun, you can put him behind you under center, and just if formations alone, just having to know that this guy might get the ball is really nice to have. So you got to put weapons around him. You better get a quarterback quick in the next year or two, because, I mean, obviously Eli Manning and Saquon Barkley aren't going to a Super Bowl together.
Do you think NFL teams in general are scared when they need a quarterback? Do you think that with the success of people like Patrick Mahomes and countless other guys, not countless, but other guys, like for them to just not sit a young guy? Do you think there's pressure?
Yeah, well, you know, Mahomes sat a year,
yeah,
right, and then came in, and then the Browns were willing to sit Baker Mayfield for that year, and then Tyrod got hurt and he stepped in and obviously shown that he was ready to be a starter.
Right.
Looks like Arizona's going to do everything to trade Rosen and take Kyler Murray.
What do you think of him?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I thought Baker would be a good NFL quarterback when I was like looking at him, and even for his height, I thought, you know, he'll be good. I don't think he's going to be a great. I think he'll be good though, because he's tough and he hates to lose and he does have a live arm, and I think he's got enough, you know, instincts in between his helmet to pull it off. And you know, I think he'll be good. I don't think he'll be great. He's better already than I thought he probably would be. So maybe Murray will surprise me, but I have a hard time seeing that height. Because you can only really play one way with Murray, and that's out of the shotgun in that height. You know, I mean, the amount of under center plays you can play with a guy that's 5'9" isn't many. So
I just root for him because he's a black quarterback, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think, believe me, I thought he deserved the Heisman.
Yeah.
I think he's a great quarterback. I'm just saying, you can only play one way with him.
Yeah.
In the shotgun, that's really the only way you can play with him, or you're just fucking selling the run, and you're gonna entice blitzes constantly with him under center. And I don't know, at the NFL speed range, I don't know if he's good enough to come out of under center and take plays to, you know.
Yeah.
At that speed and that strength level of the NFL after the snap compared to college football, it's night and day.
Oh, yeah.
In college football, you're looking at maybe on the other side of the ball, your average opponent might have three guys they're going to be playing on Sunday, where in the NFL, all 11 guys play on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's where it's different. But, I think the Giants would be smart to take Haskins and have the plan of, this, Eli, this is your last year, whether you like it or not. Go out and have a great one. Prove us wrong. Take us to the playoffs. Or, do your job while Haskins sits here and learns the playbook and gets some fourth quarter reps and some blowouts or whatever. And he's our quarterback in year three of Saquon Barkley. He's going to be our second year, first year starting quarterback. And we're going to go put some pieces around it. And, I think that's literally your only hope of getting anything out of Barkley in the short term, 5-6 years of, you know, by year 5 of Saquon Barkley, I mean, that's, I think that's your best chance to be, you know, in the hopes of saying, hey, Haskins, you know, pans out. We put players around him. Barkley's a, you know, 3-4-time All-Pro by now. Now we got a team that can go win the NFC East legitimately and put us in position, you know, Brady's retired, fucking Aaron Rodgers is retired by then possibly or whatever, and, you know, Breeze. So, you know, that's, I think your hope is, you know, don't overwork Barkley, get the right quarterback at the end of the day, build some players around him, and then when the mass exodus of Hall of Fame quarterbacks are out, you know, maybe these guys are all clicking in their prime together for you.
Yeah, yeah, because I just, you know, when you live, because I'm not a Giants fan. I used to be one when I was a kid. I used to just be an NFC East fan, and my dad liked the Cowboys, so you like who your dad likes, you know.
Yeah.
But, it you know, and they, it was fun to watch, and I kind of missed the NFC East, even though the Eagles won the year before, but it was just kind of like, eh. It's kind of shitty this past season.
Yeah, the success you really haven't, other than that Eagles championship and the two Giants ones. I mean, they're heading. I said before, I was even talking about it before the Eagles won. Like, I was doing a podcast right before the Super Bowl last year, and I go, other than Eli's two Super Bowls, I mean, that division hadn't won a Super Bowl since Troy Aikman.
Yeah.
You know, and the Cowboys. So,
right.
Really, you know, that Philly one is only the third Super Bowl to come out of that division since, you know, Troy Aikman and the Cowboys won that last one, and because the Redskins haven't won one since, I think, 91.
Right.
And, you know, so, yeah, whereas you look at some other divisions, you're like, oh, shit, well, fuck, I mean, the Patriots alone won six. They were all six out of their own division. You know what I mean?
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Well, let's talk about,
like, you know, the Steelers had won two and the Ravens had won two, so the AFC North had won four in about a 15-year span. And,
let's talk about your let's wrap it up with your Browns. Like, so is it playoffs or bust this year, this season coming up?
Well, I think it is. I think especially when you look and see, you know, it's kind of like we're right now, things are going in the way of our locker room, in the way of our, you know, off season, in the way of our, you know, whole situation. We're kind of, you know, we smell like the Steelers right now, and the Steelers smell like us with everything that's going on and all the turmoils and, you know, the stuff. So they're kind of, obviously they've weakened. I think Baltimore, you know, even though they're going to go with their new quarterback in the future, they signed Ingram and a couple guys, Earl Thomas, but they've lost Suggs and some other players. They've decided to go against some of their better defensive players. So, you know, Cincinnati's kind of in a bunch of muck, and yeah, I think it's playoffs or bust. I think that, you know, even when you look at it, you know, we almost snuck out of that week 16 or 17 with a win over the Ravens. And even though the Ravens went and won our division and went to the playoffs, I think that at the end of the season, the Browns were playing the best football in that division. We won five of our last seven games of the season. And right now, what I love the most about that, I can't say that I can ever remember saying this probably since, you know, we had Marty Schottenheimer and Bernie Kosar and Ernie Accorsi all in place at one time. I got to believe that for the first time we have a GM, a quarterback, and a head coach that I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't, you know, I've never said in all three of those departments, which I think are the most critical to an organization, if you're going to go win it, I think you got to have the GM that you wouldn't trade, the quarterback you wouldn't trade, and the head coach you wouldn't trade. And other than Bill Belichick maybe calling and saying, hey, I, you know, I'd love to come and work with you guys and work for John Dorsey and work with Baker Mayfield to go win Super Bowl, I wouldn't trade Freddie Kitchens, because the way they worked together last year, him and Mayfield, and the things they were able to draw up, and the success that they had on third down, and the fact that after Baker Mayfield took the starting job, there was only two quarterbacks in the whole league all year that had a better rating, passer rating, in the red zone than Baker Mayfield, and that was Mahomes and Brees, the guys that finished 1-2 in the MVP voting. So I won't trade. I can't remember the last time I didn't want at least 1, 2, or all three of those positions the fuck out the door, you know? So that's what I love. And now, you know, because I love the GM, that means he's getting the Odell Beckham Juniors, and he's making the offseason signing, and he's using the draft picks that we have wisely. Instead of just keep stockpiling more, he's actually trading some of them in the right move. And then he's still got eight more picks and sizable cap room. So maybe at the end of the day, before the draft, the day the draft comes, we only have six of those picks or five of those picks, but another bigger name or as big of a name or maybe not as big blockbuster name as Odell Beckham, but somebody else on the defensive side of the ball and in another need position. And who knows, by draft day, maybe, you know, our odds to win the Super Bowl have even gone down. I mean, we're the fifth. We right now, Westgate Plaza in Vegas, that sets the betting standard for everything, has the Browns as the fifth best team to win it at 14-1 out. There's only four teams ahead of the Browns with better odds to win the Super Bowl.
Now, I was going to ask you this, and I kind of, as you're talking, do you think Joe Thomas is pissed? And I just Googled him, and he says...
No bigger fan.
Oh, yeah.
There's no bigger Cleveland Browns fan than Joe Thomas.
Where they think... They say he might contemplate coming back, but he seems to be really excited.
He should.
Yeah.
Listen,
I just kind of feel bad for him.
I say either come back or go take the Monday Night Football job so Jason Witten never comes back to that. Whatever he wants to do, whatever, you know. But, Joe Thomas, there's no bigger fan. That guy's so psyched. He's on Twitter, and he's always, like, making videos during the season. Last year when we started getting rolling and then it started getting fun. So, yeah, man, it's going to be a fun year in Cleveland, man. The Browns are at least on their way back, and they've got a chance to really, and how great would this? I said this on my podcast the other day where I go, man, how awesome would this be? Fast forward to January 2020, and it's a 13-3 Browns team that has home field in the AFC Championship game, and they break fucking that Patriots dynasty finally. They send Bill Belichick home where it all started as a Browns head coach. All those years later, because the last time the Browns won a playoff game, Bill Belichick was our coach, and he beat the New England Patriots in Cleveland in 1994. And so how cool would that be if it came back all full circle 25 years later, and the Browns were able to kind of, you know, end the last real chance maybe the Patriots ever have to win a Super Bowl with Brady and Belichick. That would be awesome. Now I'm really daydreaming, but I'm just, you know, hey, man, I'm enjoying it. I'm drinking it in, man.
Yeah, it's something to be happy about because I immediately thought of you, like, because I don't know who told me.
It's amazing how many people immediately thought of me when, like, it's so funny, like, the texts I get, anything that remotely decent happens to Cleveland. It's like, it's so funny. It's like, we haven't even done anything on the field yet, and I got, like, 80 texts yesterday. I get more texts over the Browns signing a free agent than I got for getting engaged. I got more congratulations texts, I swear to God, from the Browns getting Odell Beckham than the day I got engaged.
Wow. That's something. Yeah. Because
I know your engagement was just worthy of a like on Instagram. But how about those fucking Browns, dude? Call me sometime.
Well, when I saw that you got engaged, I was like, about time. You need to lock that down. What the fuck were you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly. And believe me, I wanted to do it like 2 years before, Chris. But do you know how long it takes for a comedian to save enough money to buy a fucking ring?
I hear you, man.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not,
dude,
judging
you.
Are you
kidding me?
No, because
somebody told me
about Odell. Like, we were in the back of the club or whatever, and one of the booker was like, "Do you like football?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Did you hear about Odell?" I was like, "Oh, shit." And I went to Twitter, and I was like, "Oh, all right." Yeah.
When there was my dumbass doing a video celebrating it, probably. Like, Odell's coming to Cleveland.
It's
like,
fun, yeah, man. It's fun.
It
All
is.
This off-season
is,
shit. Like, you want to know, like, the drama. Like, we could talk about chicks and their women in their, like, reality TV or their Kardashians. But our shit is the same thing, you know? Where does this guy going to go?
Dungeons and Dragons. It's great.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just. It's fun. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Do they have an offensive line that's going to protect Mayfield?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, here's the one thing. Our problem isn't protection on the offensive line. It's kind of like just bonehead false starts and you know, some dumb stuff like that and holding. So if we're not moving ourselves backwards, you know, with dumb penalties, and we're not sitting here at the end of a stat sheet looking at, you know, 9 penalties for 125 yards or something, and, you know, a bunch of those are false starts or holding calls, yeah, we can keep Baker upright, and he gets rid of the ball so fast that it makes the offensive line even better, right? You know, when you right. know you got a quarterback that can get rid of it, it's easier to kind of get off that snap and hold the block harder for 2 seconds than, you know, fearing that you're going to have to hold somebody up for five. And, you know, now with Beckham and, you know, Landry on the edge, these guys are college teammates. I mean, they're best friends.
Yeah.
That's the other nice thing is, like, yeah, you guys might be happy about getting Odell Beckham out of the locker room, but Javaris Landry is happy about getting him into ours. So there's some familiarity there. Landry's already known to be a locker room leader. You're going to have him already selling these guys, and he already has on Odell. You're going to have him selling Odell on these guys. And, you know, there's never going to be a perfect world, but I think that there's a lot. The Browns right now are probably the best locker room fit for an Odell Beckham Jr. Because what makes Odell's legacy great even more than it is right now? If he can come to Cleveland and win,
mm-hmm.
could you imagine what it will do for Odell Beckham Jr. to be a AFC North champ, just to take the Browns and be in a playoff game, and a home playoff game even in, mm-hmm. in Cleveland? I mean, let me tell you something. They will be That city will he will be satanized in that city if he is. I mean, he'll be right up there with Baker Mayfield. If that team gets to the playoffs and that offense delivers the goods and Odell Beckham Jr. is in there playing nice with others, that city will let him kick two girls in the hallway.
Oh, God.
You there?
I'm here.
No, I'm just saying.
I know.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that city will, they will go crazy, dude. They will go crazy.
Oh, my God.
And he will be a hero, and it's the best place for him to show up is a place starving for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be interesting, man. Well, look, I don't want to keep you, man. This has been fucking awesome. It's been a
lot of fun, man. I'm glad we got to do it again, Chris, man. I miss you. I'm trying to make a little run out there. I haven't been in New York City in 3.5 years already, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you got to come back. Yeah.
Yeah, so I know that we were trying to work on something with that new virtual reality show that they're doing out there. I think Gotham.
Yeah, I did it. It's fun. It's a fun gig.
Is it fun?
Yeah, it's a nice.
Yeah, you know, I've just been kind of going back and forth with Chris a little bit, so I'm trying to work on a date, maybe try to get something for May if we can work it out. And if so, man, I'll hit you up and we'll get together and it'll be NBA playoff time at that time, so we'll have to watch some ball games together.
Oh, definitely, man. That would be the shit.
Yeah, well, man.
Could you want to plug? You want to plug anything? I know you got stuff going on.
You can find me on Instagram. I'm at Lawheads Court, just how it sounds and spells. Law and head. Lawheads Court. Court, like basketball court. And then at Jason Lawhead on Twitter. You can Google me. Jason Lawhead comedian. You'll find like my Facebook pages, the like, my YouTube pages, my website. I also have my podcast called Lawheads Court. You can find that on iTunes. It's kind of a, you know, hodgepodge. Sometimes I just do 10-minute daily little rants. Sometimes I do longer ones, interviews. But you know, got a, you know, well over 150 some episodes up on iTunes with that. And that's about it, man. If you're happening to be hearing this anytime soon, and you're in Vegas or Lake Tahoe, I'll be in Lake Tahoe, whatever.
This will go up on Sunday.
Okay, so Lake Tahoe on the 27th through the 31st at the Improv at Harvey's Casino up there. So
cool.
If there happens to be any mountain folk listening to your podcast and they want to come by,
cool, man. Well, I appreciate you. We'll stay on to the line. Thanks so much, Jason, for doing this.
Yeah, man, great doing the show with you as always. And you know, keep up the good work, Chris. Man, you're a funny dude, and I always enjoy following you and seeing all your guests on the podcast. And I'm hoping to catch you on the last OG again this year. You going to be on?
No, but there's gonna be. It was just like a one time thing, but it'll be.
Yeah, I know.
There'll be some stuff like we'll talk about it off mic.
Man, yeah, last OG. I'm looking forward to that. Starts here in a couple of weeks. That was a great show.
Yeah, it's a fun show. It was cool to get on there. Like, I had auditioned, like, I think early on in the process, and nothing came of it. Then they needed somebody really quick, and I like felt like, you know, auditioned, put myself on tape and made it, and got to do a scene with, you know, a breakout star, Tiffany Haddish. So that was a fun,
cool, man.
Fun little thing. All right, man. Well, stay on the line and take it easy, everybody.